Before I begin, I'll remind you that the industry's can't-miss must-attend event is a few months away. The Airport Experience Conference, formerly the ARN Conference, will be held at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas February 24th to the 27th. For the handful of you who have never been, don't miss an event attended by all the airport experience industry's decision makers, executives, forward thinkers, and change agents. They'll all be there, all in one spot, under one roof, learning, networking, and sharing. Oh, and there's the Experience Hall featuring new and established brands. You got to check that out as well. And for the majority of you who attend annually, don't wait. Register now. In fact, everyone go to airportxnews.com/conference to get details on the agenda, to register, to look for sponsorship opportunities, and of course, to exhibit. Basically, don't miss the Airport Experience Conference. This is episode 12 of the Airport Experience News Podcast. I'm Ramon Lowe, the publisher of Airport Experience News. And as always, thank you for listening. If you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe to us on any of the following platforms: iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or Stitcher. Because by subscribing, you're going to automatically get all the latest content as well as access to our library of episodes. In fact, if you're listening for the first time, please go back and check out our previous episodes because they're still a great listen. So in this episode, I speak with Kelsey Finn, the CEO of NACAS, which is the National Association of College Auxiliary Services. And she and I were connected by Tina Welch of Einstein Brothers Bagels because, well, for the conference, I was looking to bring in some thought leaders from other non-traditional venues such as stadiums, hospitals, casinos, and universities. And I really wanted to expose our group to some of the things that other non-trad venues do well, what they don't do well, and hopefully there's something that we as an industry can learn from. Anyway, back in September sometime, Kelsey asked me to speak at their annual conference and we did a chat about airports. It was fun. So I figure it's best that she come and do the same on this podcast, and she was more than game to return the favor, and it was a great chat. So here is my conversation with Kelsey Finn. So I'm here with Kelsey Finn, the CEO of NACAS, which is the National Association of College Auxiliary Services. NACAS is the leading trade organization that supports the non-academic segment of higher education through various campus services such as food services, bookstores, housing, and transportation. And if anyone thinks that I actually wrote all that, I did not. I totally lifted that from your website, Kelsey.
Perfect. Well, you read it well.
Thank you. Well, thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's my pleasure to be here.
So I can't really thank you enough for inviting me to speak at your conference, which, man, it was a couple months ago now. It was great. And for those of you listening on this podcast, Kelsey had invited me to share a bit about some of the things that we were doing in the airport side. And I guess we kind of wanted to look at how those things could possibly be applicable to your industry. Well, now we're going to do things kind of in reverse. I would like to take the time on this podcast to really learn a bit more about your industry and how it could possibly apply to airports. I gave that quick line about NACAS, but if you can, just please briefly give me a little bit more about the organization and its purpose.
Yeah, so NACAS is, we just turned 50, so you are at the conference, our 50th conference, and I think we're really focused on this idea of enriching the campus experience. So research today is showing that students pick where they go to college based on fit and feel, and they stay at college based on their out of classroom experience. So these are all very important pieces when you talk about auxiliary services, as you listed at the beginning of this podcast: housing, food service, bookstore, transportation. All of these things impact the way students are picking college and staying and being successful in college. And so we were really focused on how do we help our members, which are colleges and universities, primarily in the United States and Canada, provide those services on their campuses in a way that keeps students safe, secure, and engaged on their campus.
So we'll just get into it. Food has been undergoing an evolution in airports for nearly two decades. And I'm sure you probably noticed that because you do a fair bit of traveling. So on your space, in your space, you know, what are some of the trends happening in higher ed? And I guess maybe you give some background on the challenges in your space and then kind of share some of the great stuff as well.
Yeah. So food is such an important piece to everything we do, right? Everyone either loves it or hates it. They need it. They want it. It needs to be healthier, faster, all of those things, and delicious, right? And so I really think, to your point on the challenges, I'll start there. I think when it comes to feeding students on campus, we really face this multi-need from a how you are fed at home really impacts how you want to be fed when you come to college, right? So we have international students, we have students from different regions within the United States and in Canada. So how are you creating an experience that can feel like home, especially in residence hall dining, for a variety of students? So that's definitely a challenge that's continually faced, right? How do you make it personal while feeding masses? So that's kind of a residential hall dining issue. And then I would say on the retail side, you see these influx of students coming at the same time because classes all get out at 12:15. So at 12:20, your lines are really long and then everyone else needs to be back in class by a certain time, right? Mm-hmm. So how are you, how's your throughput speeding up? Because the reality is sometimes adding hours isn't going to be the answers because the students aren't there, right? They're only there at certain times when it comes to retail dining. And so I think those two things stick out to my, in my mind as challenges in the space, right? And I think retail dining on college campuses really mimics airport trends, right? So how are you healthy, quick, tasty, moving people through at peak times? And then we're also seeing this food quality is really important, right? This idea of celebrity chefs on campus, people are bringing them in, rotating food options and services. So the space isn't always the same thing. It rotates in and out. So I think really some campuses are trying to be as creative as they possibly can and then making it personal.
In airports, there's usually like a lag between from when something happens on the street to when it happens in the airport, only because, again, historically, the contracts in airports have been rather long. Now they've been cut down to about 10 years or so. I don't know how long the contracts are in higher ed, but that usually accounts for why there's a gap from when something launches on the street and it obviously doesn't get applied until much later on. So do you guys face something similar to that in higher ed?
Yeah. For sure, something similar. And I would say the trend is the same way. So standard contract length for food service was upwards of 10 years before, and probably in the late 90s, early 2000s. We're now seeing shorter contracts or contracts that are written in a more flexible nature, right? So one thing that's interesting and slightly different, I think, in higher ed space than airports is some campuses are self-op. So they self-operation to us means the dining program is run internally. The labor and the leadership are university employees. Mm-hmm. And some create their own brands, but then they also bring in brands. And they have flexibility in the length of terms of those contracts and what that looks like. I've seen some schools doing space that they're calling it pop-up space. So you can stay up on some of those trends. So they give contracts out that are 6 months and then they change on a semester basis, or they continue if that trend is still popular, right? So that's happening in the self-op space. But then we also have contracts. So groups like Aramark, Chartwell's, Sodexo come in and run the campus food program. And really the flexibility there then becomes what brands can those contractors bring to campus. And so you might have a longer term agreement with the contractor, but then the brand, you may have terms in your contract to rotate brands in and out, or mm-hmm. how do we keep up with trends while keeping some consistency? We also know, you know, if you go to pizza, to ramen, to, you know, sandwiches, you need all sorts of different equipment to do some of those things, right? So, you know, there's a limited amount of flexibility, especially when you have built out costs in those places.
So going back to the self-operation, mode. So you're referring to that the universities do it themselves. The universities are the ones that are sourcing the brands or sourcing the concepts, et cetera, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And are they usually, is it usually someone from the food side that maybe they have history in that? And I mean, and are there instances of like a great examples of this being pulled off, let's say?
Yeah. Yeah. So they typically do have a food service background. It comes from a variety of places. I would say you'd see people coming from restaurant operations, but potentially coming into higher education, a chef that is looking for a career change and to do something different and have an impact. That's maybe not just in the kitchen. And then you have folks that grew up in dining services on college campuses. So they started as student employees, right? Working the line or in the dish room, if you will, or even in the kitchen, right? And they've worked their way up kind of through the ranks to running food service programs, which is kind of cool to see, right? I think that's a value that being on a university campus provides you, is student employment and where they can grow from there. There's some cool things happening. University of Georgia has a great food program, UMass. I was just at the University of Houston a couple weeks ago touring their food, and they have decided all of their food concepts, the kitchens are in the front of house, which I think is awesome and you don't see happening on college campuses very often. So students see their food being prepared right there. Right. So it's not all real time. There's some food that's already prepped, especially in the dining halls, that's kind of grab and go or serve yourself. But you see it happening. You see the prep work. You see where it's coming from. They've built some hydroponics for their leafy greens in their residence, in their dining halls. You know, they can pick the greens, they can see it prepped, and they can eat it all right in the same space, which I think is just an awesome thing happening.
That's great. You know, it's very similar, just like in airports, I guess, the whole theater kitchen, the prep work as entertainment.
Yeah. Well, I think that comes down to what you were saying at the beginning of this, is like, everyone's looking for an experience, right? So how are we moving to, food is an experience, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just nutrition. It's how do I interact with food? How do I have a relationship before it even becomes my nutrition, right? Mm-hmm.
So just switching over to retail for a minute, rightly or wrongly, I think that campus bookstores are kind of like probably the extent of retail in higher ed. You know, is this so? And if not, you know, what are the trends in retail right now?
Yeah, so bookstores are definitely the solid trend, right, of retail. What I would say, we're in an interesting time of transitioning from the traditional, when you say bookstore, and it's lines and rows of textbooks upon textbooks upon textbooks, to campus stores. And so what does a campus store really feel like? And what is that experience created? So, you know, we're bringing brands into the store. So intentionally, you know, you have a Kate Spade section or a MAC cosmetics section. You have technology stores have always, not always, but most recently been around on college campuses. So how do you have tech space? Accessories, of course, are always, everyone's losing a charger or something all of the time, not unsimilar to an airport. Right. So what I see happening in the campus stores is it's a set footprint. So it's not so many different storefronts, but how are you creating multiple retail experiences within potentially one big box?
So it's basically a store within the store. It could be, like you said, with a MAC branded section or a Kate Spade section, et cetera.
Totally, totally. And what I think about our conversation from our conference, and I think about our conversations to this point, and even us being connected, is I think that's what campuses can start to learn is how do you bring retail to the students on campus, right? So this idea that they're online shopping has increased, but brand awareness, and there's still somewhat of a need to have both, right? So how are you providing space where students can touch and feel a product, even if it always isn't purchased at your store, right? And I think campuses are starting to feel that out of how that comes into play long-term for them. And then I would also add, how are we bringing food and retail together? So it's the coffee shop that also has merchandise, right?
So it's safe to say then that the higher ed space has not been immune to the Amazon effect. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is definitely correct.
Oh boy. Cause I know, in our section, I guess I could just talking about airports, you know, we say bookstores in on campuses, the newsstands and travel are now called travel essentials or travel convenience stores are really the ones that are attracting the most traffic because it's, I just need snacks. I need small essentials, small electronics, et cetera. It's more based on need. And it seems I'm seeing more commonality on that end with universities and airports.
100%. I think the C-store, the convenience store model, everyone wants a C-store, convenience store on campus. And then the question is what do your specific students need, right? So depending on if you're urban, rural campus, commuter campus, residential campus, is there a Target, CVS, Walgreens right around the corner from you? Is there nothing? And how big or spread out is your campus? So you might need more than one C-store, which to me is somewhat similar to airports as well, right? So you have convenience stores in different terminals and you might have even four or five different ones in one terminal. And so how campuses are starting to think about it, and I think labor comes into play, is there's not always the square footage in every building on campus or every corner of campus. So how are we doing? I don't know if you had time in our expo hall, but we had some convenience stores in a box, mm-hmm. right? So they're waterproof, weatherproof, and you can get all of your convenient items, right? So I need a charger and some Advil and a pack of gum. And I can put that all in and this machine, little arm comes out and gives that to me. And I think that's a way that campuses will start kind of solving that problem across campus because space just becomes limited from a retail perspective.
No, I totally agree. And it's funny because I was hoping to draw a lot more distinction between our two industries. And I see more commonalities than not. you're right I hate to call them vending machines, but the, you know, those vending type machines are at least on the campus side, probably more an extension of reach, you know, serving an underserved area. Whereas in airports, I do see them sometimes alongside or within two or three units away from a store that's offering something similar. So there's some cannibalization, not a lot, but it's usually a good way to kind of extend the reach and service into maybe the far corners of a university that probably otherwise you don't have the room to put a store of any kind in.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of companies, and when you do kind of the how far will a student walk for something, it's really a 5 to 10 minute radius. And so when you're talking campuses that are acres upon acres large, you know, when you're, it's only that 5 to 10 minute radius, it is that reach and extension of how are you getting. The other piece I would say is how are we meeting the students where they are? And so I think delivery on campus is a topic of conversation of when I walk out of the classroom, how can something be delivered to me right there? So I don't have to go to another building that's 20 minutes away to get what I need, kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, airports, I think we spoke about this in Orlando at your conference, you know, were built for the most part, probably 40, 50 years ago when they didn't have concessions in mind or long dwell times in the post 9/11 world in mind. So they don't have these inline spaces. You have to get more creative. So it's not uncommon to be, you know, in the far reaches of a terminal and there's nothing there but like a vending machine or what would be a bar or maybe like a wall unit with some, you know, grab and go items. you know? So I could totally see that as well.
Yeah.
So in my industry, we have the airports where people say they are, quote unquote, I'm making air quotes as if anyone else can see that I'm making air quotes, but you know, where people are,
I can feel them. I can feel them through the phone.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And you know what? I'm going to do it again. There are people that are saying that there are airports that are, quote unquote, doing it right. By that, I mean, they have a tremendous program of food, retail, and services. And I'm sure you have equivalent in universities as well. So I think you touched upon it a little bit with like UGA, et cetera, but what are some other programs that are kind of doing it right and how are they doing it right?
So I think doing it right is different from campus to campus because it's just so unique based on the culture that you're trying to create on that campus. So one that comes to mind when I was thinking about this call is Long Beach State. So they're in Southern California. A lot of commuter students, their bookstore has been run by the campus for many years. And it's one that they're just doing it right in the sense of they're willing to try anything once, right? So nothing is off limits. They're open to ideas from their students. They're paying attention to what's happening in the community. And they're really looking to how they can be integrated in the campus experience. So it's more about what do the students need? How can we make this an exciting place to stop by, to shop, for people to think of us first, right? And I think that's important on a college campus of how do you become integrated into the fabric of what's happening on a day-to-day basis, right? And I think, and then we'll talk about, you know, UMass from a food program. They're just really intentional about the chefs they bring, the food they cook, how they do it, what the industry trends, trying to be in front of those trends. And I think that works for them. And that doesn't always work for other campus. And then like University of Georgia, you know, you put a Chick-fil-A in there and everyone's happy, right? It's an easy solution for now. And everyone on the West Coast is like, how do I get a Chick-fil-A? But it really is a very much environment to environment, culture to culture on campus.
So just to go back to the food aspect a little bit, on the airport side, there's no formula. I'm just going off of what seems to be popular. If you were a larger hub airport with lots of connections or a lot of connection times, let's say like in Atlanta, Chicago, it's, Houston, et cetera, you tend to have a lot more, quick service, fast casual, grab and go types, because again, you're going from one gate to the next and you need to grab something and just make your connection basically. Whereas a lot of destination airports, let's say like a Portland or an Austin, actually not Austin so much anymore, but Portland, Austin, et cetera, you might see a lot more local, or you tend to lean more towards a sense of place. Do you see that anywhere as well in on the campus side?
Well, I will speak from personal experience. What I think happens is it's more of a regional impact.
Yeah.
I think from the experience I've had. So I started my career at Illinois State University. So Midwest, a very brand heavy part of the country, right? So it's, you know, your TGI Fridays, your Applebee's, your McDonald's, it's very, that's how it happens, right? Outback, whatever it may be, right? And so I think those campuses look to meet the needs of the students with brands, recognizable brands that they're used to in the Midwest. Now, of course, this is all changing and I'm generalizing, but then I would say moving west, I went to UNLV, and when I was working there and we opened the student union, they wanted pizza, right? Which I would say kind of falls into a traditional food item, right? Mm-hmm. But they wanted pizza from the local chain. They didn't want Pizza Hut or a brand.
Sure.
They wanted the local pizza provider, right? And so we did that. And then when we went, I was at UC Berkeley, and you go further west in the California spin, it's like, well, we want what they were calling, the mom and pop.
Sure.
I want the person whose mom is the mom of the polo player on my team. I want her business to make the sandwiches in the student union, right? There's more of that personal connection related to who they want providing the food to them in the union. So I think it's regional and based on culture in that sense.
Would it also have anything to do with it being more of a commuter school versus a school? I don't know what the terminology is, coming from other parts of the country. Mm. Would that affect it as well?
For sure, it does affect that, right? Residential campus. So when you have thousands of students living on campus, it becomes their community, right? Mm-hmm. They live there, they sleep there, they eat there, they go to school there, they play sports there, right? It's their community within the community. And then the commuter campuses really are the passerbys, the pass-throughs. I come in, I go to class, and almost even all campuses have commuter students. It's how do you get those students to want to stay on campus to purchase things from food to merchandise? How is it their place to get the services versus going off campus? That's definitely a topic of conversation and always something campuses are trying to leverage.
So the next thing is, you touched on it earlier, is labor. It's a big deal in all industries, obviously not just the airports or higher ed, but can you just provide a bit of background on how it works in your industry? Because there is a lot of shift in terms of semester to semester, and I'm sure there's a way that, whether it's self-operators or a Sodexo or Aramark, et cetera, there's probably a certain way or a science that they need to adhere to in managing that labor, especially, I'll follow up with the second part when you answer that one first.
So labor, you're completely right, right? So with the flow of semesters and then even summer, so right, you have typically a fall semester and a spring semester, and then you have kind of winter and summer, right? And depending on how the contract is managed, depending on how your flow is, you have seasonal employees, right? So they're full-time in those busy semesters, and then they're cut way back or kind of a temporary layoff. And some even go on unemployment during those other months. Some work in other places. Usually management is a year-round position on campus. And then there's always work to be done, but there's definitely a chunk of the workforce in food service and in retail that fluctuates. I would say for the stores, there's even more fluctuation in that the beginning of each semester, when students are purchasing their textbooks or real excited to be back on campus and, you know, buying their gear and everything they need to start the semester, there's kind of seasonal help in the sense of the start of the semesters even. So it's definitely labor is a constant thing for both retail and food service on a college campus. And the good part is the trends are pretty similar year over year, right? You know, when classes start, you see when students stay on campus, how long they stay on campus. But then there's always kind of I would say probably a difference between airports and campuses is there's always a conscious decision to kind of, it's important to have a food service open, even if you aren't going to make money on that day. So as you go into winter break, if there's students on campus, how do you decide who stays open? What takes the least amount of labor to run so that you can still have a food option for the minimal people that are on campus during that time? That makes sense.
No, certainly. So the second part, I'm going to get to now, of that question is, you know, in airports, I even see this on the street, actually, even more so, you know, you have touchscreen ordering where you could do that now. Mm-hmm. And I believe Shake Shack is doing it. You have apps, you have app delivery services like Uber Eats, et cetera. You know, how is that, I guess, one, affecting labor, if it's even necessary, on the campuses, and two, I guess, how is that affecting the units on campus?
Yeah. So what I think is fascinating, not being, I oversaw retail food service, but wasn't a food service person by trade. Right. So coming into this role, we have one of our business partners, they're Topingo. They're based in the Bay Area. and they provide exactly what you're saying on college campuses, but it's brand agnostic and it works with the campus card. So students can put money on their card, et cetera. You know, they can order the food and pick it up from the location. What I've realized is happening is that in the back of house, then there's no, all of the orders aren't queuing in the same way. So you have multiple orders coming through. One's coming from a cash register, one's coming from Topingo, one's coming from maybe an iPad walk-up station. But now it's actually creating more labor to queue those tickets and move those orders through, which is an interesting thing. And some of that is just a software. We're learning the types of software and point of sale systems that are running on college campuses aren't really letting all of those things talk to each other, which is an interesting issue in and of itself. But I think from a student perspective, you have convenience, but from a back of house, I don't know that I think you're putting through more orders, but you're not saving on labor that I would have thought.
That's interesting, because normally you would think that a shift towards various technologies would mean a shift towards kind of reducing your overhead a little bit, but you're saying it, at least in on your end, it's not, which is cool.
And I would say, yeah, it's an interesting, so some of it is, especially when you're talking about, we'll just keep using Chick-fil-A because it seems what comes to mind right now, or even a Starbucks, right? So they have their own online ordering system. If you layer in a Topingo ordering system and you have cash register, those are all coming through in a different timestamp, different time way. And a computer technology isn't bringing those all together right now, to my knowledge. So it is an interesting problem that I think someone will solve, right? Because it can't keep moving in that direction. It just doesn't work for efficiencies, but I don't know what that solution is yet.
Yeah, it's weird because I would think that it drives the move towards reducing labor when it's not. I guess in some ways it's forcing you or the operator to redistribute the labor. Because I know you said it before, I'll use Chick-fil-A as an example as well. I read somewhere, I think several weeks ago, where they're testing out a store unit that's just simply order ahead and pick up. It's just pure fulfillment. There's no, no walk-up. It's just a test case. So basically you just ordered on your app a number one with large fries or whatever it is, and you walk up, you grab it, and then you're on your merry way. I just look at those types of innovations or test cases that looking at, especially in airports where you have tons of traffic, how would that be used? Mm-hmm. Probably something similar to higher education.
Yeah, totally. I think listening to you talk about that makes me think it's almost like currently we're trying to use old ways of labor and older technology with new technology. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't all work. So your example of this test site is like, okay, so let's just try it all from scratch. And instead of trying to piece all of this together, let's just try a whole new way and see what happens. Yeah. So I'd be way interested. And I do think that's a conversation in the higher ed space of these like commentary type kitchens where the orders are coming through. They're very individualized and specialized. And then you're picking it up. And then I also think that it has the potential to provide the ability to be more nimble in changing out what food you're providing and the products you're offering, because you're not set with this front of house, all the branding, the point of sale system, right? All of that doesn't really exist anymore, potentially, depending on how this all happens. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I just interviewed someone for an upcoming podcast who her company is based on, is focused on customer service. Actually, her company's name is Customer Service Experts. And we had a conversation on, are all these technologies basically eroding the need for customer service, or is it just evolving it? Because if I just, I don't know about you, I'm pretty old, but I remember back in the mid 90s, there was a movie called The Net with Sandra Bullock, and all she did was order everything from, the internet, which was way in its infancy at the time, and she never had to leave her house, et cetera. And I kind of pictured people being the same way. So if I'm not really dealing with a person, I just go to a touchscreen and order my number one with a large Coke. is there a need for that person to really be super nice and happy for me as they're just really handing me my order? You know? But no, seriously, that's a domino effect from everything. I mean, do you agree or?
Totally. I do agree. And at the same time, I think it's a balance because it goes back to, we're also creating experiences. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to move all, my personal belief is we're not going to move all the way to a technology. I mean, we could even get to the point where a robot hands you the food, right? You order it, you come by, and they're doing this in Berkeley right now. You can order, it's a noodles place. You put in your order.
Mm-hmm.
They put the order in a locker, and then you come in, you open the locker, and you take your food out. So you actually don't talk to anyone ever. And so, I think that works in some spaces. And like maybe Berkeley. That does work in food if it's good, right? And you're willing to be creative. I can't imagine all places of the country are like, well, let me get my food out of a lock. but I think all those things are possible. It also makes me start thinking of, on the retail side, a company like Warby Parker, for example, right? Everything was done online, and now they're opening stores, right? So you can have the experience in store, but you also are ordering online. And so I think when it comes to customer service, the experience, I think everyone wants everything, right? We want it fast, we want it personalized, and we still want it to be an experience. So how can you meet all of those things? And when does it need to be a human interaction? And when does technology fill that space appropriately?
Well, it's funny because I'm actually, you mentioned the, online experience and then creating kind of like a brick and mortar experience. I'm actually trying to speak to someone at Amazon because their Amazon Go stores are completely, well, cashierless. I'm not going to say they're without. Mm. But, you walk in, you grab your sandwich and your, odd wall of juice, and then you just kind of walk out and, well, not that easy, but, it's all through the app and it's pretty simple and basic. But again, it's just, I don't think, maybe in some aspects, technology will invade or become more prevalent in others. I think like dining, I think it still should be there. I'd hate for all of us mm-hmm. towards being a society where we're just completely shut out from everyone else. It's like, when I used this other example the other day, when I remember reading when iPods first came out and you would take the New York City subway and everyone would have their iPod, and you know it because they'd have those white earbuds in their ears and they're not talking to anybody. We're just not totally
mm-hmm.
social.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm taking us down a rabbit hole that, hopefully it's not so difficult to get at.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great rabbit hole. I think that's where everyone is. It's the balance. Where's something that's kind of, it's fun, it's unique, it's an experience in and of itself. It's like, well, I'm going to get noodles when I go to Berkeley because I want to try this locker, right? But is it sustainable? Does all food need to go in that direction? No, because at some point you want to go to a restaurant and you want to sit down and you want to have an interaction, right? So I think we're going to see it all playing out in different ways, and there's a space for all of it. But I do think when it comes to technology, quick food service is going to be technology. We're going to have to find ways to make lines and service go faster.
Yeah. So I guess it's
right.
Certainly. I guess like in airports, then you got the focus is portability, convenience, speed, just like in campuses.
Mm-hmm. And then it's quality, right?
Yeah.
So I think I would add quality to that because you can have all of those things, convenience, portability, speed, but if the quality isn't good, they're not coming back. Right.
Absolutely.
And I would say that's probably even an experience in an airport, at least for me personally, as I'm walking through, it's like, all right, that was fast, but the food was kind of crappy. So I'm going somewhere else. I'm going to try something. I'm willing to sacrifice some of those other things for quality. And I think students today have a broader food experience growing up. Majority of our students have had a broader food experience. That quality matters.
So my last question for you is, again, like I mentioned earlier, you travel very frequently, and so you're familiar with the airport environment. And even if it's only as a traveler and not necessarily as an insider, but from your point of view, you know, what are the 2 to 3 things that higher ed does so well that you feel could be applicable to airports?
So one is, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but I think flexibility or multi-use of space. I think campuses have to get really creative, as I was saying, with potentially smaller footprints or one big box footprint. And how do you move a number of things in one space? I feel like campuses do that well and get really creative to make that happen, which then creates an experience of, oh, I can go to this one spot and do all of these things right here. And I think with airports, right now, everything's so segmented, right? So I get my convenience items here, food here, a beverage here. How do you create, and I think you're starting to see some of this, but how do you create space that multiple things can happen in one location without having to go to 4 different cash registers?
Sure.
So I would say that. I would say rotating in local vendors. I think colleges have done a great job and universities of partnering with local celebrity chefs or local food vendors that the community really supports and wants to see in their spaces. So bringing them in, and what does that rotation look like, and how do you make that experience, be it food trucks, be it at sporting events. I think that's the other piece that the university experience offers, is there's sporting events. So how do you make those unique each time? They don't have to be the same way all the time with the vendors and the product you're providing. And then this opportunity to do university-wide things. So how are you creating partnerships that do multiple things across campus? So potentially a partnership that does, we'll use Under Armour, an apparel company for an example, right? So how do you potentially do research on wearable technology, provide product in the bookstore, internships for students, uniforms for custodial staff, t-shirts for student events, right? And so is there a need in an airport that providers could do multiple things? So how are you thinking about both revenue generation and cost savings when you're making agreements with brands on campus? Is something that many are doing well.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned the rotating foods and things like that. I guess it comes down to same thing in campuses, depending on the region or the community that you're in. Mm. So Portland, I believe it's Portland, I hope so. Portland had somewhat of a rotating food truck type of program. So they gave you the shell of a food truck, and they would invite local popular food trucks to come in, and then they would dress it up. Now we're serving Korean barbecue. And then next thing you know, it's going to be sandwiches and salads or whatever it is. And it was actually pretty popular, but that was the effort of Portland. And I think MSP, Minneapolis St. Paul, is doing something similar. So I guess maybe it's just the mindset, or adapting the mindset of whatever region, city you're in, kind of like campuses do.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, it comes down to, if there's something that you're doing really well that people can rely on, that it will always be there. So there's comfort. There's something comforting in knowing I'm going to go to this same place every time I fly through X airport, or every time I go to this part of campus. And then there's also something like, oh, this experience is exciting. So where's the balance between that, right? Oh, there's going to be something new and adventurous when I show up in Portland, right? I'm going to get to try something new versus, I'm thinking of, and it's super random, I think, but Nashville's airport, right? So there's always Tootsies. We're not going to say whether the food is good or not, whatever, but it's always there. But then the music changes, right? So that's the experience that you get there. It's the entertainment part versus the food is always the same. So I do think regionally is a big impact for both industries.
Yeah, certainly. So actually, I'm going to close this off with just one last question, because it's an airport podcast. Favorite airport and why?
Ooh, I'm going to have to go Phoenix.
Wow. Cool.
Phoenix. Well, one, I have heartstrings to Phoenix. So anytime I can get there, I'm there. Mm-hmm. But I would say what they've done with the food and the retail there, anything you want, you're going to be able to find. And I also love that when my plane is landing, I can order something and it's ready for me when I get off if I need it. So I vote Phoenix right now.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, we're not going to get into the ones that you don't like, because I think you and I shared that and we can't do that on this pod. So, but Kelsey, thank you very much for taking the time. I think we could have probably gone another hour if, I certainly had the time, but I know you're busier than I am. So, but I very much appreciate this. And I know you're going to be coming out to the show, in Vegas in February, in a few months.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to seeing you again. And again, thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you. And I will see you in February.